From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, Texas legendary songwriter, singer, and author Rodney Crowell. He opens up about his life, his music, and his work.
The iconic artists that I've taken notice of over the years, it seems like all that they do is get up and go to work every day.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. Rodney Crowell is a Texas music legend. After 40 years in the country music business and with the string of hits that he's recorded, produced, and penned, the 63-year-old Houston native is back with a new collection of songs titled Tar Paper Sky. Crowell is also a recognized author after the publication of his 2011 memoir, China Berry Sidewalks. There, we learned about the details of his Houston childhood, marked by poverty, turmoil, and his volatile relationship with his father. And there are echoes of China Berry Sidewalks in Tar Paper Sky, as well as echoes of Crowell's 1988 commercial breakthrough album, Diamonds and Dirt. Texas Public Radio's Yvette Benavides spoke with Crowell about the new album.
I had no sense that I wanted to look backwards, toward the late 80s. It just happened that the creative team that I pulled together were most of the musicians that made Diamonds and Dirt with me, mainly Stuart Smith, who's a longtime collaborator of mine, and he was just as active on the Houston Kid as he was Diamonds and Dirt. And Tar Paper Sky was really born out of conversations that he and I had, where we talked about landscape painting, of all things, and how to establish a narrative around pastoral images and to create a soundtrack to go with it. Now, it sounds like a high-minded conversation, but, we just look for ways to figure out what kind of music we want to make and use that as a sort of shorthand.
And it wasn't produced in typical fashion. It was recorded live, like in the good old days. Why that way?
Yeah. Well, because I discovered most of the music that I love and that I would consider timeless was recorded in, the late 50s, mid to late 50s, early 60s. And, there's really a lot of great music recorded in the early 70s as well. But the notion is let's unplug headphones and record the way, Ray Charles did in 1959 and the way Patsy Cline recorded in 1960. And the end result, without headphones, you can't overdub, you can't stack it and be really careful about what you're recording. You just have to get out there and perform. And I really maintain the notion that the most timeless music is not produced, it's performed.
In dreams of mile-high cotton fields, we once ran barefoot through. My dead drunk Uncle Fireball growls these words. Blood don't make you a family boy, and I've got news for you. Snakes don't sing like speckled birds. Are you ready for the long journey home? The flatland swamps and bayous in your bones. The simple life tastes sweeter now. You have no
So having produced so many other albums, though, in that other way, in that other sort of, very produced way, how did you find the process, or how did the other musicians find the process?
Well, the first day they were confused because they'd played on 1,000 records and done it the other way. But by the second day, they were all in that zone and realized the opportunity to make music in a different way.
Do you think it made the music better on the album somehow?
I do. And I'm, made a record called Can with a host of performers and with songs that I collaborated with Mary Carr, and that's basically the way we recorded that record as well. And it's something that I started getting real interested in you know, around 2005, 2006.
This is your third album in as many years, and you mentioned Kin. You co-wrote those songs with Mary Carr, the memoirist and the poet, and mm-hmm. followed that up with Old Yellow Moon, your album with Emmylou Harris. And now I read you're working on another record with Emmylou Harris.
Well, writing songs for one, yes.
So by any standard, this would be considered like unusually prolific for any artist. What is driving all of this creativity and all of this work? It seems like it's just so incessant.
Teddy loves his work. Look, I've raised four daughters, and for the most part, they're out on their own, and so I have a lot of time, and I like to spend it making art. I'm an artist. You know, it seems like the iconic artists that I've taken notice of over the years, it seems like all that they do is get up and go to work every day, and, you know, gratefully. So really, think about it. If I were the plumber, I'd be getting up and going to work every day, too, and probably be a pretty productive plumber. But I have this other job that, you know, to complain about working long hours would be sinful, because basically I'm getting paid to make stuff up.
And when you're in that process of writing the songs for one or another album, do you get up at a certain time every day and write every day? How does that work?
If I'm home and I don't have friends visiting, I'm up working every day, make a pot of tea, and I'm working. And it's what I prefer. I'm happy to be. I'm kind of a split personality in that I'm a ham, and I like to be out and I like to perform. But I really also like that monastic existence where I'm just back in front of the piece of paper every morning, you know, inching those songs along, you know, coaxing them out of hiding.
Well, our last discussion, yours and mine, was in 2011, and our subject was China Berry Sidewalks, your memoir about your parents' mm-hmm. marriage and your childhood. And you told me at that time that writing that book had led to your looking at your songwriting through a very different lens, and you were working on Songs for Kin, the album of songs you wrote with Mary Carr. So how, if you think about that process of writing the memoir, how is it different from this process of working every day and writing songs, and then how is it the same?
Well, I would say that, you know, that anyone who's productive in writing books and paragraphs and sentences, they're up working every day. It just doesn't get done if you're not dedicated and working every day. So writing songs is a lot different than writing sentences. Generally speaking, you know, a word standing on a page is, I mean, it's out there, and you can't overperform on that. If you do, you're going to get busted. Whereas you can use really giant metaphors in song because you've got chord changes and you can bend the words, you have melody to hide, to tuck it in behind, where, you know, if you look at You Are My Sunshine, My Only Sunshine, that's a great big old metaphor. And, you know, it sounds kind of good in a song, but you stick it on a page with just one person reading it, it's like, hang on, you're going over the top. So, I mean, I learned that, and I learned that songwriting, the metaphor behind songwriting is, or that, you know, informed songwriting is often too big for the page, as they say. But I think your question is, in terms of work and getting things done, I think it's really a very simple thing, and it's probably with any artist, it's, how much dedication do you have? Do you get up every day and go to work? because that's the only way you're going to really produce.
And is there another memoir in the works?
Oh, I don't know. I'd like to take a swing at it because I'd like to, probably after that book was published, I probably learned more about writing after it was published than maybe even in the process of writing it, because I don't know, you get away from something, you look at it and the mistakes you made glare at you, nag a little bit so that you learn. Hindsight ain't no good sight, but it's my sight. Wish it weren't that way, but often it is.
And what would you focus on?
What would I focus on?
Mm-hmm, for the next memoir.
If I were to try that, I would focus on seeing if I could write more quietly.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it was big. It was noisy around my house where I grew up, and I think there's a way to do it more quietly that might have a little more elegance. Yeah, I think I would try to see if I could, you know, naturally find an elegance that, look, let's face it, you know, if I'm sort of guessing at which order the words go in, and sometimes I guess right, and, you know, thank God I had an editor who would help me, who knew more about how, you know, the order of the words should go in than I did. But now I know what I know, and if I tried it again, I might, you know, I may find a little more elegance in the end product.
I heard a siren, and you came to mind. You were the pretty part of us. I'm what's left behind. The equation's remainder, the last standing sign. God, I'm missing you. Your mouth still so soft, your countenance fair. Time stretches to shape you right out of thin air. But it can't hold the image if I blink, you're not there. God, I'm missing you. Are you gone forever? Are you gone for good? Or have I gone crazy? Wishing you would come around the next corner, step over that train. Your old black umbrella, face half in the rain. God, I'm missing you.
You're listening to Texas Matters. Let's get back to the interview with Texas singer-songwriter Rodney Crowell.
You co-wrote God, I'm Missing You with Mary Carr, and Lucinda Williams sings it on Kin.
Yes.
But you get a turn at it on Tar Paper Sky. How do you feel about each of the renditions, yours and hers?
Well, Lucinda's version was pretty stunning. You know, and the day we recorded it, she just walked in and gave a performance on the song. You know, we were mannered and allowed our guest performers to pick the song they wanted. Now, I coveted that song, and I wanted it all on my own, that Lucinda picked it, and it would have been bad form to not let her do it. Mm-hmm. And then she proved it, you know, how much she loved the song by hitting it out of the park like that. But I had a notion that I had a version of it, too. And, you know, I had a record that I was making. I said, I'm going to stick what I want. This is how I want the song to go. And, you know, I think they're both really good versions. I'm not ashamed of mine, and I'm proud of Lucinda's.
Ooh, here's to love, here's to life, all the fair and tender. Mad dog, mountain fly boy, and a
Carr converted to Catholicism and has been really open about this journey she's been on with her Jesuit priest, spiritual advisor. Do you all ever discuss religion?
Yes, we do. But I think, well, I learned a good bit about religion, about Catholicism from Mary, but probably our discussion would be just more spiritual in nature. You know, because I'm East Houston. I was raised in the Pentecostal pit in East Houston. You know, the discussion tends to be, you know, to find about the spiritual aspect of our lives really more than the religious aspect. But, you know, I understand what Mary gets from Catholicism, or I think I do. And it is a whole lot of solace, as far as I can tell, and self-acceptance, and I think a real feeling that one is loved in the world by Christ.
And that same kind of empathy and that understanding. What led to Jesus Talk to Mama? This is a song you wrote for your mother.
Well, yeah, Jesus Talk to Mama is, listen, my mother, in her way, you know, she would, a lecture from my mother was generally, son, God gave you a gift, you should write more sacred songs. And that's what, you know, gospel songs were called, sacred songs. You know, on the sharecrop farm. And so I took a few swings at it and wrote some what would be qualified as gospel songs, and I think got it. But when I wrote Jesus Talk to Mama, I was just thinking about her and said, well, you know, I'll just write a song to my mother. And every word in that song would be exactly, it would be approved by, my mother would say, I approve of this song.
Jesus, talk to Mama, tell her I'm all right, tell her that I'm on the mend, tell her I've been born again, tell her that the future's looking bright. Do this, won't you, Jesus, for I never meant to stray. Jesus, talk to Mama, tell her that we'll meet again someday. Jesus, if you hear me, take a message to my mom. Tell her that I'm in your hands, tell her I'm a different man. Tonight I beat the devil to the draw.
For your whole career, your songs have transcended genres and defied an easy fit in any one. So many artists have covered your songs, everyone from Keith Urban, Bob Seger. But
Van Morrison.
Pardon?
Van Morrison.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very long list. Etta James. It's a very long list.
Etta James.
Yeah.
I'm cool.
Yeah. You are. But so how do you feel about the different labels or genres that your work seems to be placed in? Now it's country, now it's folk and Americana, which seems wildly popular these days. But how do you feel about those labels?
When I speak of Howlin' Wolf, I'll call it the blues. And, you know, when I speak of James Brown or Ray Charles, I don't really call it rhythm and blues. You know, when I speak of maybe Louis Armstrong or Charlie Parker, I'll call it jazz. But, you know, once you get into the 50s, you know, these so-called genres are labels that are put on music since, say, 1955 when Elvis hit, and it just became, I didn't even see any need to call it country music, to be honest with you. I'd call Hank Williams country music, but it was country blues. But now in 2014, it makes no sense to me. I think you have to define hip-hop as hip-hop. But after that, what may be considered rhythm and blues now, I don't see any reason for that. You know, you can just tell me who the artist is, and if I know their music, I know what it sounds like, and I don't need to label it. It's just like, does it appeal to me or doesn't it?
I'll never forget how my grandma loved that old man. He was a night watchman down on Canal Street. A salty old bird, a man of few words. He was Friday night man. He walked with the king, smoked Prince Albert and the king. I'll never forget how my grandma loved that old man.
And what's your favorite cover? We were talking about all of the folks who have covered your songs. This is a really unfair question, but do you have a favorite?
I do.
What is it?
Well, it's a version of a song called Ashes by Now by Roger Daltrey that was never released. It's still in a can somewhere, but I heard it. And I used to play it for my daughters when they were single digit, and they would squeal when he would sing the chorus, and I wanted to squeal with him. it was a powerful, powerful performance, and never released. So there you are. That's just the way it is.
And we'll never hear it, I guess.
unless somebody releases something from the archives.
You tore through my life like a tornado, looking for a trailer park.
You've won so many awards, most recently for Old Yellow Moon. I saw some photos of you on social media at the Grammys, for instance, and you looked a little sheepish. You're a consummate artist, so I'm wondering how you feel about awards and awards shows.
Sheepish. I like sheepish. You know, don't be fooled by that sheepish exterior that I'm having. Beneath it, there lies the heart of a wolf. You know, I'm on the hunt. So what's your question? I'm sorry.
Just that. How do you feel about awards and awards shows?
I mean, I feel great about awards, you know. You give me a Grammy and, yeah, that's cool. Now I'm a multi-Grammy winner. And I'm proud of it. And I think now the television show that goes on, I don't know. I mean, even that's really big and inspiring. I'll curl up on the couch and watch the Academy Award show and listen to people's speeches and see which one resonates with me. And I think it's all good, but you just can't do you. You know, it can't be the reason that you do any kind of work. You know, if you start making any kind of art or music or whatever it is, you know, with it with the eye to win a prize, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to fall. It's not going to happen because that's putting the cart before the horse. I think any kind of accolade that comes like that, it comes on the back end of having done good work. Or, in some cases, it's just your time. Hmm. And maybe it wasn't the best work that you did, but because of an accumulated goodwill, it comes, you know. It's hard to tell.
Some really amazing videos accompanied those hits from Diamonds and Dirt. And back in the late 80s, the video was almost as important as the song, it seems like. How do you feel about videos for songs from Tar Paper Sky? Are you making any videos?
Yeah, a couple today. Made one yesterday. But I was never a big fan of the conceptual video. Early on, and I made a bunch of them, and we performers sometimes are pretty needy and want to see ourselves splashed up on the screen. But my real feeling about it was that, you know, all of those images being put on the screen weren't as rich as the ones I had when I was supposed to be sleeping at night and I had a little crystal radio and I was listening to Johnny Cash sing I Walk the Line. And the images that were, you know, that my imagination projected out into the night were vivid. And the reason I wanted to be an artist, you know, in some ways, I was kind of cynical and thought that, you know, the video, it was the beginning of the downfall in terms of taking away your audience's own relationship with the song. Show them the image, and then what do you leave them?
But I will say, it seems like videos are less accessible now. And so, for me anyway, it seems like, now it's time to listen to the music again without the little movie.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's face it, videos were commercials for your music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could have been selling Cadillacs
mm-hmm.
or Creole emulsions.
I haven't heard that word in a long time, Creole emulsion.
Yeah.
Rodney Crowell is a multi-Grammy winner, a member of the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame, and the recipient of the 2009 Lifetime Achievement Award for Songwriting from the Americana Music Association. The Houston native has seen his songs covered and performed by many of the greats of country music. His latest album is called Tar Paper Sky. Crowell was interviewed by Texas Public Radio's Yvette Benavides. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to Texas Matters with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. And you can also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. And that's where past Texas Matters programs are available to listen to. And you can find us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.